Okay, so this is joint work with a group in Tokyo. And this is the stage of color communication as I explain it to my student. So we have a lot of different devices. Then they are talking not two and two, but they communicate through something like a connection space, and that's usually CLAP or some CIE system. And then you can ask yourself, is that the best way to do it in all cases? So for example, if you have a four-band tetrachromat and a two-band dichromat, how should they communicate with each other? Should they really use the standard observer? So my proposal is to go back in history and use a system from 1854. And in this approach, everything, every unit would have an attached geometry, and I would say something more about that. And then you would use the machinery from geometry to manipulate these connections. So that's the basic idea. So why should we do this? So I guess if you use this differential geometry, then you have a very strong model, and very often you can say, is it possible to transform space 1 to space 2? So can we have uniform color spaces? And for some cases, you may, for example, find out that it's impossible to transform a football into a donut. If you cannot do this, then the framework will give you perhaps an idea of how to organize or how to formulate this as an optimization process. And that was, for example, described by Philip Urban several years ago in JOSA. Another thing is also that if you have this framework and you think in terms of this framework, then you may use the framework to do some intelligent cheating. And I'll tell you something more about that. So the whole thing is based on Riemann geometry. And I don't go into details here, but you start from the observation. You have two points, two vectors, x and x plus delta x. And then you compute in usual geometry the distance between them by squaring the components, summing up, and computing the square root. If you do it a little bit more complicated, then you can write this here as the transposed vector times the identity matrix times the vector. And now the observation of Riemann was that you can replace this one here, this identity matrix, with a very general type of matrices, J of X, that are positive, definite, and symmetrical. And then you can vary the geometry from one point to the next. So you don't measure angles and distances in the same way at every point, but you vary this over your space. And the whole advantage of this is that everything that you can do is described with this single function, g of x. And if you look in the paper, then many people have problems with the notation, but simply think of this G as a matrix, and then you have some conventions on how you sum up and how you write these things. And if you read the notations, then it's, I guess it's clear that this is meaningful and can do this. So. One central thing that you can do is that you can compute the distance between two points, and you can compute the length of an arc in this space, and then you get this type of formula. And the main observation here is that everything is really already defined in this g of x function here. So this completely describes everything. And it's also possible to show that all the relevant properties are coordinate free, so it doesn't depend on how you write coordinates. Everything like geodesics, the curves of minimal length, or curvature, that are the deviations from flatness, everything is expressed in terms of this g of x. How do we get this g of x? Usually people start with formulas, and this one here is, I think, one of the earliest from Helmholtz, but what I want to concentrate on is empirical measurements. That you cannot use the same metric everywhere, you can see from these just notable differences, ellipses, which are changing depending on where in the space you are. Just to frighten everybody, this is the some basic formulas on how you use this, but don't worry about this, you can read it in the paper. And this is a list of people who invented different types of formulas. And it started with Riemann, who already in his first paper mentioned color as one of the applications here. But then came Schrödinger, Stahls, Wallraffen, and so on. But next question is, why should we look at curvature? People have used arc length, but not so much curvature. And one question you can ask is, why should we use curvature? And it is one property that is preserved. So if you want to compute an color space which is homogeneous and you want to flatten it, then you can say for certain properties you can never do this. So this is one result that you will get. Another thing is more technical, that when you know curvature, you can construct something that is similar to the, for example, Mansell color coordinates, and that has a geometrical correspondence that is known in geometry as Riemann normal coordinates. Okay. How do these Riemann normal coordinates look like? It's like this one here. You start from an origin, and then you go along these geodesics. They are the shortest lines. And then on every geodesic, you pick a point with the same distance, and then you get this angle type of coordinate component here. And that corresponds to the U and the saturation. So in this framework here, saturation is length on the geodesic, and U is the angle on these curves connecting the points of equal distance. Now, Riemann curvature and geodesics. So you can show that there is one way of measuring curvature, that's Gaussian curvature. And the simplest case, it's flat. The other one here is where the Gaussian where the geodesics never intercross, and that is something like a hyperbola. And then you have geometries like a sphere. If you go along the equator, you end up at the same point eventually. And so now the question is, these color spaces, which curvature do they have? And can we then say something about the mapping between these color spaces? So here is an example where you have 97 different measured ellipses. And the question now is, if we don't start from a formula, but from measurements, numerical numbers, what do I do in the empty space around here? So this is the first thing that you have to decide. And this is a type of freedom. You can choose different ways to do it. And my favorite way is the numbers three, but you can do it the other way around. And you can argue for other ways to interpolate between two such ellipses. So this is the first thing, and this is a free parameter that you choose when you go from the measurements to your continuous model. So here is an example of what you can get. The two red ellipses here are given, measurement, and then you have to interpolate what is in the middle between these two red ellipses. And depending on which interpolation method you choose, you get either a circle, you get this one here, or from geometry reasons, you can say this is more or less an optimal way to do it. And it's quite different here. So you have to make a choice what you want to do. So this here is now an example where the ellipses are interpolated on a whole region on the convex hull. Another one here. And then you can use, after the interpolation, you can start computing curvature according to the formulas. And then if you start from one of these interpolations and you compute the curvature of this standard observer with the 97 ellipses here, then you see that your solution here, the numerical solution of the differential equations, they give you regions that are positive, with positive curvature and negative curvature. So red is positive and blue is negative, which means here the color space looks like a sphere, here the color space looks like an hyperbola. If you have regions with positive and negative curvature, you can never do it. So you can never flatten it. So then you have to do something else. From the geometry, you also know that if you start in a point with negative curvature here, and you take the geodesics, then as long as you stay in the region of negative curvatures, they will never intercross. So, okay, here you're fine. If you go out here and then you come into these critical regions here, okay, it doesn't work. So here you can getting intercrossing. So you can think of starting from two different hues, and then you go along the curvature, the geodesics, and then you meet at a common point, which means that, what is the U now in the intersection? It doesn't work here. Okay. And it can never work if this is correct. So the preliminary summary here is that everything that has to do something with color, they run around with their own color space. And this can be modeled with a Riemann space. And then we characterize it with this metric. And then you interpolate here. And then if you have the interpolation, you can compute geodesics and Riemann normal coordinates using normal numerical methods here. So since you have only 97, and that's very many measurements, and you have a lot of empty space around it, you can say, okay, my measurements are noisy anyway, so I don't trust them. And if I don't trust them, then I can somehow say I do the interpolation and I smooth the whole thing, or I do some type of regularization, because some of them I trust, some of them I don't trust. And then you can think, okay, if this is bumpy, and if I smooth it, then it will be smoother and the bumps disappear. So perhaps I can get rid of all the positive regions in this color space. So we did this here. And then you can see here, this was where we started from. Then you smooth in the parameters, and then you can increase the region of negative curvature where everything is fine. But you will never get rid of the region with positive curvature. So a whole series, and you can see that the smaller problem regions here, they disappear. So if you compute now a geodesic, so if you have smoothed it, then you have a higher chance in this smoothed space that you can generate here a meaningful or easier to use Riemann normal coordinate system. So, and I guess it's meaningless to ask, is this correct or is it not correct? You make a choice and then you stick with it. Okay, so there is another result, and that tells you that if you are on the sphere, if you have positive curvature here, then you can say something about the minimum distance where you are guaranteed that you will never intercross. And this one here would then be a parallel coordinate system where you place your origins here, and then you generate for around each point of origin such a Riemann a normal coordinate, and then you patch the whole system up with these patches, and then you can say what is the guaranteed radius where there will be no such intersections. And so this one here could be one example of several patches here. So you start here and then you see how these geodesics, the coordinate system looks like. Okay, so conclusion is that if you think in terms of Riemann geometry, then you have a framework, and the framework gives you theoretical results. It gives you also recipes and numerical methods that you can use to estimate the continuous model from your measurements. And so everything or everybody is running around with its own GFX. Thank you.
Thanks, Rani. Any question? Sasha.
Yeah, it's very interesting talk. And actually, the Macadam ellipses, they are not ellipses. There are some empirical studies, much more recent, and they show that there is an asymmetry. They like an egg rather than ellipse. This is the first question. And second question, maybe this explains why all these problems with different curvature for different patches. And the second, the whole ideology, the whole approach is based on the Fechnerian assumption about the equality of GNDs for threshold. It means that if you take the surface of equal discrimination around the point, the subjective distance from the center to the points of the surface will be equal. And this is an assumption and cannot be proved. And there is a lot of controversy about this assumption. All these Stevens arguments against Fechnerian approach is serious. So don't you think that all this alone can undermine this approach, or this approach should be based on some different empirical results, like large-scale color differences? Since this time, Helmholtz and Schrödinger's time, we've got a lot of data about large differences. It's scaling, multidimensional scaling, and for example, why don't you try to squeeze into the Riemannian space the OSA data?
I have to say one thing, and if you look here on this slide here, I'm not primarily interested in human vision. So in my world, a printer, a web camera, or a C-lab, or whatever space you want, I don't care where it comes from, as soon as I get this, I try to identify and model it with Riemann geometry. So if your ellipses that are measured are not ellipses but stars or whatever, then I say, okay, if you only go near enough to the point, then in this very small neighborhood, I can model this geometry with the Riemann model. That's it. Oh, I described the printer with, six parameters that describe the ink that is going out. And then I have the color space that is a Riemann space with seven parameters, and it has a geometry, and then I can map the seven ink printer together with the paper interaction to something else. So that's the philosophy. It could be that you say that this is the measurement, say by a multispectral measurement, where the two colors have the same distance, where you define what the distance is. So this is the general approach of the Riemann geometry. So you are free to decide what your metric is. And then as soon as you have done this, then you get all the machinery.
Very quick. Just wait.
In the interpolation that you are proposing, did you check when you are interpolating how far it is from the real data? Because you are interpolating, and then it might end up with something very different.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So I can never say this is right and this is wrong. I mean, it's the same way in the printing business. If you print a JPEG image, it's noisy and block. That's correct. So you are the user. You are in control. You say what's good. Okay.
Okay. Thanks again.